Hello, I'm Allison Munn, a third-year medical student at Oregon Health and Science University, and I'm at Starbucks at Siri Ra Hospital in Bangkok with Dr. Sarah Schwanke Kilji to hear about her experiences in her career and with mentorship in her professional development. So thank you for joining me today to talk about this.
Thank you, it's my pleasure.
Just to get started, I wondered if you could share a bit about your current job and what exactly it is that you do.
So right now I'm employed full-time with Oregon Health and Science University, but I have a kind of unique position there. I split time between Bangkok, Thailand, where we are right now, and Portland, Oregon, where OHSU is based. And so 30% of my time is clinical, and that's all based in Portland on the Hill, working for the Clinical Hospitalist Service. And I try as best as possible to kind of do all of that time while I'm back in Oregon over the summers, though I do go back more than once a year for various reasons. And then the majority of the rest of the year I spend here in Thailand, so about 70% of my time working for OHSU Global. So OHSU Global Southeast Asia was a program set up several years ago now to focus on developing long-term, sustainable and bi-directional collaborations with partners here in the Southeast Asia region. And we're hubbed out of Bangkok, out of Thailand, and we also have projects going on in Myanmar and Laos. Most of my work here focuses on our partnerships in Thailand, specifically our academic partners. And I, in particular, am focused on developing educational exchanges and collaborations, research collaborations, and teaching, particularly when medical students from OHSU are here.
Great, thank you. So taking it back a little bit, what originally got you interested in pursuing a career in medicine?
So I'd originally thought about medical school early on in college, although I don't think I had a really great idea at that point as to what exactly I would do besides become a doctor. So I think it was like a fairly vague aspiration. And then at the end of my freshman year in college, I was asked by one of my German professors, actually, to help escort this visitor around campus who was a global health diplomat, essentially. And so she had come over from Europe and was giving some talks, and I had a chance to talk with her a bit about her career, and that inspired me to develop an interest then in global health. And so at that point, actually, kind of took a little bit of an alternative route, and during my sophomore year of college, changed my major from biology to international relations, political science and international relations, and also applied and was accepted to medical school at Mount Sinai through their humanities and medicine program. And they admit students in their sophomore year of college, so that it freed me up to study a humanities subject for my major. And that's kind of where my interest in global health specifically started. And I decided to pursue an MD within that kind of framework then, because I thought, you know, at the time, all of the people I looked around and saw as potential role models doing types of work I was interested in had an MD or an equivalent degree from another country. And so I thought it was kind of an essential credential. I think that's changing now. I don't think that it's as important now as it was maybe 20 years ago. But, and in fact, medical training involves a lot of training that's probably not so necessary for what I do now, although certainly for my clinical work it is. So that's why I decided to pursue the MD after making that shift in focus. And I did reach a point where I wasn't sure, honestly, if I was going to actually practice clinical medicine or not, whether I would just get the MD and then move directly into health policy and research. But I realized during medical school that I really like interacting with patients too. So I decided then to specialize and pursue residency, and now try to blend those two things.
Mm-hmm. That's a very different approach than I think a lot of people take going into medicine, so it's very interesting to hear about your decision process going through that. Among the various different things you have your hands in right now in terms of work, do you have certain projects that you're very excited about, or things about your job that are your favorite parts in your career?
I will say that there are many days where I think, this is such a great job. Like, I can't believe I get to do this job. So I'm very grateful for it, and I recognize that it is like a fairly unique position. But as far as specific projects that I'm really excited about, one, I really do enjoy teaching this course that you're here for right now, the OHSU School of Medicine elective that we have here. So I really love just like talking about these kind of fundamental concepts in global health that we go through the course and applying them to this setting that I've come to really love here in Thailand. And then as far as like things on the horizon that I'm really excited about, we are developing an interprofessional course that would be not, it's not exactly the same as the medical student courses that exist in parallel to it, but cover some similar concepts but with more of a focus on the Thai health system context and understanding how to develop collaborative work and focus on teamwork in this setting, which would hopefully involve students from across OHSU's programs, so medicine, nursing, dentistry, pharmacy, public health. So that's something I'm working on and I hope to have off the ground this coming academic year. And then another thing that's very near and dear to my heart and exciting is this kind of new collaboration OHSU Global has with Sirirat, specifically the Faculty of Medicine Sirirat Hospital, around primary care, because there's a lot of interest in both of our institutions around really bolstering primary care, and that's what I did, what I focused on during my residency. So, and I believe very strongly and philosophically the importance of primary care, so that's another point of a lot of excitement for me.
Those are really exciting. Well, just to shift gears a bit, the purpose of Women to Women Medicine is talking about mentorship between women medical trainees and physicians. So kind of a general question, and it's a bit vague, but what does it mean to you to be a woman in medicine?
This is an interesting question. I think it's a hard question, because I do agree with what you said earlier, that I probably don't have the most typical way of perceiving what that means to me, or practicing it. And I think it's shifted a lot for me over time, too. I think the way I perceive my role within medicine as like an individual is increasingly focused on just wanting to be able to promote health in whatever context I find myself, and that can take a lot of different forms. That can mean clinically, that can also mean like in terms of developing health policy or medical education. So I think that that's kind of how I perceive my own role. As far as how I then layer on the identity of being a woman there, I think when I first started thinking about that, I immediately like bring to mind challenges, which is frustrating because I don't want to have that immediate association. But yeah, I think when I start qualifying it as how I view myself as a woman in medicine, then I think back, especially the times during training when it was just like logistically very difficult. This is something that I'm also, I think has become easier for me, like thinking about just balancing like personal life and kids. And I think that over time, those things become easier, but it still is like always salient. And I think particularly women working in global health face a lot of challenges. So you know, already there's a lot of attention on women in medicine and, you know, discrimination as far as pay gaps and other gender-based, and it's gotten a ton of attention lately with recent research and such. But I think when you get into global health as a woman in academic medicine, those things are potentiated too, because then you start having to figure out how to like bear children and breastfeed while you're traveling between countries and possibly exposed to the things that we don't have to think about in the United States and how that impacts your children and your family. And so I think that, yeah, it poses a unique set of challenges, or additional challenges, I should say. And this is something that hope to be reading about a lot soon. There's a Lancet article coming out actually focused on women in science, medicine, and global health. So stay tuned for that. I think, yeah, that's something that increasingly people are getting interested in and I think raising issues around.
Okay, that's a very interesting point that I haven't really considered. And so, in terms of your process, in terms of like creating a family and also going through your training, at what stages were you in your training when you first had children?
So my first child, my son, was born exactly halfway through residency.
Oh.
And which was probably not the ideal time to have a child, but it was fine, it worked out. But this was made even more challenging by the fact that I was living alone in Boston at the time. My husband was posted in first in Sri Lanka and then in Bangkok. Yeah, I guess he was already in Bangkok at the time our son was born. But yeah, having that happen like middle of my junior year in residency in a fairly intense training program was quite challenging. And all I remember of the second half of residency is work and sleep. And I know there was a baby there, but I don't remember much more. But yeah, that was when our first child was born. And then my daughter was born actually here in Thailand when I was working in a different role when I was doing health systems research here. And was that was about a year after I finished residency.
Oh, okay. And that's when you had to think about more in terms of exposure. And
yes, yeah. Because at the time, for instance, I was supposed to, while I was pregnant with her, I was supposed to go to Myanmar to do some work on a project that my team was working on, and it involved basically taking a chartered flight to this remote area, because at the time they didn't have regular flights in and out, and in the end decided it was too risky just for health purposes because I had some complications, so that definitely, you know, impacted what I was able to do for work.
You also mentioned like the gender pay gap and other obstacles and challenges you face as a woman in medicine. What strategies or approaches have you found to be successful in overcoming those barriers?
So I think this is hard. This is a work in progress. And again, this is like viewed from the lens of someone who's worked in a lot of kind of non-traditional roles, particularly in global, like non-US settings. So I did admittedly take a lot of positions since residency, between residency and now, that were at a pay cut, essentially. And that wasn't so much linked to my gender necessarily, but more linked to the type of work I was doing, because it was non-clinical work. But, you know, I felt like the balance was such that I still benefited something from taking those positions, and so I was willing to do that. I think once then I shifted back into clinical medicine in the States. So I worked for 1 year full-time doing clinical work back at OGC before starting my current role. And so when I was, you know, taking that position, I did get some advice from other female colleagues who had done this a few years before me, and hired a lawyer, like was really kind of tried to be more proactive with the whole hiring process as far as what I was negotiating for. And yeah, sought advice from several female mentors at that time specifically. And I think my approach now is really just to kind of stand my ground whenever possible. I think trying not to be afraid that you're going to lose something by doing that and by asking for what you want, I think is important. Because in most cases, the worst that can happen is someone will tell you no. I don't think, most of the time, you're not actually jeopardizing your position. You know, it's always worth asking, I think.
That's good advice. I think, at least I personally, I'm sure other people have felt this way too, would have that fear of kind of jeopardizing the offer or losing everything instead of gaining something from your advice. So that's good to keep in mind. You mentioned mentors. As far as like step one when you were thinking about med school all the way through now where you are now, have you had like numerous mentors or specific mentors that have helped you through the process? And if so, are they men or women or both?
Yeah, so definitely a mix. I think for me, I've had numerous very focused mentorship relationships, and again, that's partly just because I've taken this kind of odd route through my training and education. But starting when I was, well, I would say my earliest mentors actually were just like people I'd read about. Honestly, I was like really inspired by books growing up and things I'd read, and a lot of my early decisions I can clearly link to specific books that I read. And this includes decisions like which state I wanted to go to college in. I really loved Margaret Fuller and the Transcendentalists, and so decided I had to go to college in Massachusetts at a young age, for instance. But once I started interacting with real people in college, primarily is when I started to develop some of like my mentorship relationships. And it was definitely a mix. I mean, thinking back, in college, my thesis advisor for political science had a big impact both on what I studied, you know, topically and thematically, but also what I did after my BA. And then during medical school, had a number of different mentors. So I did my MD and my MPH simultaneously. So I had mentors from both sides, both clinical and public health sides. And I'm still in touch with a number of those mentors. And they were both men and women. Residency, I think, was kind of the dry period. It was just so busy that I felt like I didn't do a great job of developing very in-depth mentorship relationships. There was one major exception. It was a male physician who was involved in global health. But that was also the period when I realized that there were very few people doing kind of exactly what I wanted to do. And so that made it hard to find people to kind of follow in the path of. And so since that time, I've had to be more targeted, I think. So there are certain people I go to seek work-life balance advice. There are others that I go to seek advice about specific aspects of global health careers. Others that I seek advice around clinical aspects. So I think that now I'm just much more targeted. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Have you? You mentioned you had a mix of both men and women as mentors. Thinking in terms of like your process as a woman in medicine, what role have other women played in your professional development?
The women who played the biggest role in my professional development probably actually are peers. Because I do think that there is a small but growing number of female physicians in academic medicine doing things like what I'm doing. There aren't many. but yeah, I do know a number who are within probably like, 5 to 10 year age range of myself. And so I think they're the ones who are the biggest impact to me currently, because they're the people who I kind of bounce ideas off of, and who I think are also quite visionary about the way that both academic medicine and global health are moving. And so they definitely have a lot of impact on me now.
What advice can you give for those seeking to develop a relationship with a mentor in medicine? Kind of what strategies did you use, and now that you're at the position where you're in, what would you have done differently or the same?
So yeah, I think I could have definitely been much more structured in my approach to mentors earlier on. I mean, I think when I was an undergraduate, and even during medical school, I'm not sure people talked about like how to develop a mentoring relationship. And so I would go to people I admired or people whose work I respected and ask them for advice, but I wouldn't come and approach them in the sense of asking them to be a mentor and kind of coming with a very structured plan for what I hope to get from the relationship. And I think that that's kind of been a trend, over the past 10 years or so I've seen. Since I was a resident, this has become more of a prominent discussion, I think, within medical education. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of my a physician who was the chief resident when I was an intern in residency, I know, does workshops on this, Carrie Palomara. So she talks a lot about how to develop mentoring relationships and such. And I think that it is good advice that if you identify people that you'd like to have as mentors, to first approach it fairly formally, as far as making it clear that that's the type of relationship you're hoping for, because it is different than just asking for ad hoc advice. And then being prepared when you meet with your mentor in terms of having specific questions in mind and specific topics, like if you are approaching them for career advice versus work-life balance, or whatever kind of domain you're interested in having them mentor you in, maybe it's comprehensive. And I have some mentees now who do this really well, and I'm so impressed. Clearly someone told you how to do this, because it's so organized about it. But I think it is helpful, and I think that it sets expectations on both sides and makes it a more productive relationship. And I can't remember where I was reading this now. Just recently I was reading something too about this divide in academic medicine now between they're framing as the old guard and the new millennials, and how there's conflict inherent in that because of different working styles. This idea of moving towards micro-mentoring, which I think is an interesting idea, where you try to have more frequent very discrete interactions around specific topics of interest, which is an interesting idea that I haven't really heard brought up, but something I'm kind of curious to pursue with mentees.
Oh yeah, I haven't heard that. Yeah. That's interesting. So with your mentees and what you've heard through other discussions, what are specific examples of things that mentees can come to you with as a list of mm-hmm. expectations from their side and also from your side?
So for instance, at OHSU for Match Advising, one of my mentees is interested in also creating a career that combines clinical medicine and global health, public health research. And during our last meeting, she came prepared with an updated copy of her CV, very specific questions about what advice she wanted during that encounter as far as scheduling for the upcoming academic year and what research she'd already done so that we could discuss in a lot of detail which route she should take. And so I think, and that level of preparation isn't necessarily required for every encounter, I think, but when you have these very specific goals in mind for the discussion, I think it helps make it really productive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And let's see. As far as pursuing a non-traditional career in medicine, so taking it back to kind of your pathway and how you ended up where you are, for those that are interested in doing something similar or something not on the normal trajectory, what advice would you have for those students?
Oh, I think you have to have a really high tolerance for uncertainty, number one. And I think especially for people attracted to medicine, that can sometimes be hard. Because I think, medical training in the States and in many other places too is like very formulaic in a way, right? There's like a very clear path and very discrete milestones as far as the timing of how you progress and such. And I think that if you are taking a non-traditional approach to your career, it's kind of in conflict with that training approach that we've created. And there are good reasons for it. I don't mean that completely critically, but even once you finish training, medicine has a lot of requirements as far as how you maintain licensure and how you maintain continuing medical education, all these kind of benchmarks that you have to continually be maintaining. And so I think, one, it's important to know how to work those in if you aren't going through in the routine way, because you will need to still maintain current skills and all of these kind of meet these regulations and milestones. But two, you have to also then be kind of creative as to how you achieve the other goals that you're trying to pursue in your career. And as I said, be willing to accept a high degree of uncertainty because it won't be immediately clear all the time what the next step is when you're pursuing those non-linear paths. And I think, building a very diverse skill set is important if you are hoping to do something outside of the normal routine. Because in addition to your clinical skills, for instance, the work I do here requires research skills and public speaking skills and program management skills and a variety of things that I didn't necessarily learn in medical school. And some of them I learned by taking on jobs that didn't immediately seem to fit within my career trajectory. Some of them I just did on my own online. So I think that's another key ingredient is like knowing kind of what skill gaps you have and how best to fill them. And mentors can help with that as far as identifying those gaps for you and generating ideas about how to redress them. But it's also helpful, I think, just to like sometimes look to people that you don't necessarily know personally, but maybe public figures, or I spent a lot of time just looking at job descriptions that I thought were really interesting and seeing what the skill requirements were.
This
is back when I was in medical school. I remember doing this and thinking, this is going to take me 5 to 10 years to do these things. But using that as a template of sorts when there weren't people doing exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew that there were types of work like that out there that I was interested in.
Was there any point in that process where you wished you'd identified a mentor or reached out to someone to kind of help you through that?
So I did do that at points. I think that's another important thing, actually, is to get comfortable just cold calling people, because often I would find that at the institutions I was at that specific moment in time, there might not be someone there that I could approach in person doing what I wanted. But like I said, find someone online, you think that sounds like a cool job. I mean, I have just emailed people out of the blue asking for advice, and some of those turn into jobs. I mean, sometimes that happens. So I think, you know, being prepared to do that is also important.
Mm-hmm. I think in medical school, there's so much structure in terms of a relationship between students and residents and attendings that sometimes we can feel almost so formal that it's hard to reach out in that sense. So I guess we have to get over that.
Yeah.
Well, great. Is there anything else that you would like to share, advice you have for women medical trainees?
So I think the important things are just be prepared to take risks, stand your ground, and know what it is you want to do, I think is important too. Don't let what you want to do just be dictated by the constraints or the structure of medicine. Because there are a lot of different pathways, and I think knowing what it is you want to do is important. And recognizing that can change totally partway along the path, too. That's my advice.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me about your experiences. Yeah.